タラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタラッタッタッタッタララタタララタラタラタラタタ。
Hello and welcome. I'm Caroline.
And I'm Helen.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
Today we are exploring the topic of sustainability in sewing. We'll chat about where we're at in our journey and give you ideas for how you can be kinder to the earth in your sewing practice.
We're so excited to be a part of this conversation.
And we're all in this together.
Yeah!
Hi, Caroline.
Hi, Helen.
How are you?
I'm really good today. How are you?
I'm good. I feel like we haven't had a catch up in a little while.
I know. Well, I haven't seen you for like a week, which is a really long time for us these days.
It's a long time in Helen and Caroline land.
Yes. I've missed you so.
I missed you too. What's going on?
Oh my goodness.
Give me the scoop.
Things have been really busy, but really awesome. Recently at Blackbird, I kind of realized that we have outgrown the space that we're in, but I'm not quite ready to move yet. Moving is a little bit scary to me. So I decided I had the opportunity to take over a second space in the same building that we're in. It's just two doors down. It's on the same floor. So I kind of jumped at it.
I was a little bit rushed out of the blue.
No, it's really exciting because now we have more space and I got to set it up with another cutting table, which means we can cut twice as much fabric as we were cutting before. So we have a little bit more room to grow before I have to take the leap and move into a new office. So the last few weeks have been largely focused on setting up that space. And I went to LA to do some sourcing, as we mentioned in Aaron's episode. So that was really fun too.
Caroline showed me the pictures of some of the fabrics that she ordered when she was in LA, and you guys are gonna freak out.
Yeah, I am so pumped about some of the fabrics that I bought, but especially a few of them because they are fabrics that I've been trying to find for a long time and I finally got my hands on them. I'm not gonna give you guys any more clues, but I'm really excited that my business continues to grow, and that is scary but fun. And I'm feeling my role changing a lot lately because I've been trying to outsource a lot of things with my business. So I'm really able to focus a little bit more on the vision of things. Yeah, I'm very thrilled about where I'm at right now, and it's been really great. So
it's exciting. I'm very happy for you and glad that you're like staying on top of things because it's hard with the fabrics. People order them. They expect them to ship quickly, right? And you have shipping policies in place. You have to meet them. And Some weeks are busier than others. So sometimes it's hard to gauge just how much cutting's actually going to need to happen.
Oh, yeah. Especially recently, there have been a couple times where we've had so many pending orders that I'm like, how are we going to get all of these out on time? But Laura and Natasha are both amazing. I know they listen to this podcast. So girls, you guys are invaluable to me. I want you to know that. They work incredibly hard. And I don't know, I mean, my business wouldn't be at this level if it weren't for their dedication and hard work. So it's been really fun to watch my little company grow and dream about where I can take it in the next year or so. So
yeah. Can we talk about the denim?
Oh my gosh. Can we talk about the denim?
I mean, speaking of Laura, yeah. You and Laura mostly hauled all that denim.
You helped too.
I know, I was there. I helped.
Okay, let me give some background. So I've been keeping this a little bit on the down low for the past few months. Believe it or not, when Cone Mills announced that they were closing their US production facility, I got in contact with them and got my hands on basically as much denim as I could afford in that moment. So quite a lot of denim. But the problem arose when they told me that they would only ship it to me on these enormous rolls. And we're talking like several hundred pound rolls that we could not handle in my office. So then I had to find a company to re-roll the fabrics for me onto smaller rolls. And this whole process just took a really long time. So by the time I actually had the denim in my hands, it was like 3 months after I had ordered it. And then it was a question of how are we going to get this up a flight of stairs into the office that we're in right now, because it is up a flight of stairs without an elevator. So I hired somebody to help me do that. He was late, so Helen had to come in and help get the stuff off the truck with Laura and
I. In the rain.
In the rain. It was so dirty. We all ended up with just like truck dirt all over our bodies. It was horrible. The denim is now in the office. Part of the reason why I needed to take over the second space is because this denim is taking up so much space and I wanted to be able to store it properly. So hopefully by the time this episode comes out, there will still be some stock available. I'm not going to release it all at once because it'll just be too much volume for us to handle if it does sell out. So I'm really excited to be able to offer this cone denim to the sewing world after they've closed their factory.
Yeah, I mean, this could be one of the last chances to get your hands on this denim that was made at the White Oak Mill. So definitely go check it out at blackbirdfabrics.com. I'm going to plug for you.
Oh, I got you. Oh, I do want to also mention that throughout this whole process, I sourced some materials for jeans hardware kits, which is something that I've been wanting to do for a while. So we have jeans making hardware kits, buttons, rivets, zippers, all made in the US, YKK. I picked the finishes myself. So there's four different finishes. And if they do well, I hope to add new finishes in the future. So I'll have all of that stuff up on my website if you guys want to check it out. I'm really thrilled to be able to offer more denim offerings this year.
It's exciting. I really like the finishes you picked. I think they have a little bit more of a worn or vintage vibe. Mm-hmm. They're not super shiny. I love that about them. So I'm going to order some for sure.
Yes. What's going on with you?
Honestly, not much. I'm in the, you know, the middle of pattern process. So just lots of samples and work and details and head down, nose to the grindstone, you know?
Yeah, I totally know. I think in business, you have those ebbs and flows, right? I have been in that position where I'm like, okay, I'm just like making it work right now and just going through the motions. And you have to have those periods before you can really have those really busier periods. So
yeah, for sure. And not every month is going to be a pattern launch month and an exciting month like that. So there's going to be some working months. And I like that part of the business too.
Yeah, it's been really fun to see all the Averys pop up over the past few weeks too.
I know. I love it. People are doing everything in their Averys. I especially like the posts of people exercising in them and doing cool sports like gymnastics or pole dancing or aerial kind of stuff, running, yoga, everything. It's great. And people are saying that they're staying up and that they're not chafing and that, you know, they're just loving it. So that makes me really happy.
Yeah, you should be so proud. It's such a great pattern.
Thank you.
We also have some pretty exciting podcast news.
I've been waiting for this episode for weeks.
Me too.
So guys, ladies,
Gentlemen,
we have set up a Patreon page so that you can support us in this podcast endeavor and help us to continue to make the podcast and to grow.
Yeah. So what is Patreon for anyone out there who might not be familiar with it?
So Patreon is a website where you can pledge to support artists in whatever art form they're producing. So for us, we're producing the show, and you can make a monthly donation to that person in order to give your continued support to them.
There's also no long-term commitment, so you can choose to donate monthly, but you can also cancel at any time. But we're really excited to be able to offer our listeners this option because we have had a lot of people approach us and ask us if we were going to do any kind of platform where they can support us on an ongoing basis. So we're very thrilled that people asked for that.
Yeah, it's so touching that people want to support us. We got a lot of feedback in our survey of people saying how much they love the show, but they're also nervous that we were going to burn out or, you know, overdo it because it is a lot of work. And I love that people are concerned about our well-being and that they recognize that we're putting ourselves out there in a big way and that they want to be able to give back. I think that's really cool.
Definitely. So if you want to support us on Patreon, you can go to patreon.com/lovetosew, and we will absolutely have links for this in the show notes on our website. So do we want to talk a little bit about what we're offering our supporters?
Yes, this is not just happy, warm, fuzzy feels because you're supporting us. There are bonuses. So if you support us at $5 a month or more, you're going to get a bonus episode of Love to Sew every month. And that's going to come out on the first Friday of the month. So if you're hearing this episode when it first comes out, you can go support us and there'll be a new episode for you on Friday.
And this bonus episode is going to be a little bit of a different format than our regular episodes. We wanted to offer our Patreon supporters a bit more of a behind the scenes look into our businesses and the podcast. So we're going to talk about what we're working on. We're going to talk about what is coming up for the podcast and for our businesses. So it's going to be kind of a fun, get to know us a little bit better type of episode every month.
I'm really excited to record these episodes. I think it's going to be fun. I mean, we don't want to release things for patrons only that our other listeners are going to miss out on. So we're kind of doing a different, like you said, a different format with different content. So we hope to see you in there listening to our bonus podcast feed. And the nice thing about Patreon is that it actually provides a personal RSS link for the bonus feed. So what will happen is if you decide to support us on Patreon at $5 a month or more, you're going to get a special personal link sent to you via email that you can then copy and paste into your podcast app, and you'll get another podcast feed for all the bonus episodes.
Mm-hmm. And it'll have a special little logo attached to it, so you'll know that it's the bonus episode feed. And if you guys have any issues, definitely get in contact with us and we'll send you some support articles or guide you through it, because we definitely want to get that bonus content to you.
Yeah.
We do have one other perk that I wanted to mention on the show because I'm so excited about it.
Me too.
We made these adorable pins with our little Love to Sew logo on them. And for the first 100 Patreon supporters, we are going to be sending you a pin in the mail.
Yes, the pins are so cute. I already have one on my backpack with my other pins and I love it.
Yeah, and we'll post pictures of these pins on Instagram and stuff so you can see what they look like. Definitely get on that quick because we only have enough pins to give to the first 100 supporters.
Guys, we're really excited about this and we want you to know that it's okay if you're not in a position to support us on a monthly basis. We don't have any expectations that you're going to do this. It's just an avenue for people who want to give back in this way or feel like they're in a position to give back. And we totally recognize that that might not be where you're at, or maybe you're supporting us in other ways. We both have businesses. We get a lot of support from the community already and we really appreciate that. So there's no obligation here, but the option is there, and we look forward to connecting with you guys in our bonus episode feed.
We also want to mention that we know that in previous episodes, we've talked about having sponsors on the podcast, and we do still plan on exploring that. So you may see some sponsorships coming up or ads coming up on the podcast. We're treating it as sort of a separate thing, another way for us to cover our costs for the podcast moving forward. So look out for that. It might happen.
Yeah, we're still working on finding the perfect people to collaborate with, because we hear you when you say you want ads on the show that are relatable to you, and we want to make sure that we're delivering on that too.
So thank you, thank you, thank you to everybody who listens. And if you are in the position to support us, thank you so much.
We also wanted to say a quick thank you to all of the knitters out there who sent us knitting resources. We put the call out for resources. We got loads of knitting resources in our inbox and in our DMs on Instagram, and we really appreciate it. We're both on Ravelry now, so you guys can look us up on there if you want, and we're excited to keep knitting.
So we have a couple of listener questions that we wanted to get to. Should we jump in?
Yeah.
Awesome. So the first one is from Cassie. I'm new to sewing, and when I finish sewing a garment, I usually have a lot of fabric left over. Not enough to make anything out of, but enough that I don't want to throw it away. Should I save these pieces of fabric? What should I do with them? Thanks.
Cassie, I can really relate to this. As someone who sews a lot, I always end up with those annoying 30 centimeters to half a meter chunks left over from the projects. And it's stressful because you don't want to just keep all of these things. It just adds to your fabric stash. It's hard to keep track of what you actually have. Do you inventory them? All of these questions arise, right? So I've started inventorying my scraps that are like between the 30 to 50 centimeter mark, because that way I will have a record that they exist. And I'm trying to come up with some ideas for things to do with those scraps. And we're going to do a little segment at the end of the show about what you can do with fabric scraps. So keep listening. This episode is going to have some more suggestions for you. So our next question is from Lindsay. When using a serger, do you finish seams before construction or after? Also, on the subject of serging, are there times when you shouldn't finish your seams with a serger? I just finished sewing a shirt made in viscose poplin and finished the seams with my serger. The sides are fine, but the armholes look a little bulky. Thanks, Lindsay.
All right. So I think that this is a personal preference thing for the most part. Some sewists like to finish their seams together with a serger, and some sewists like to finish them separately before or after they sew. You can do both. In terms of the bulky seams, I think that there are definitely times when a fabric is better suited to have the seams serged together just to reduce a little bit of bulk. So in the case of this viscose poplin, that might be the case. Also, if you're working with a sheer fabric, that might be a time when you wouldn't want to serge because it will show through and it might not look as, you know, amazing as you want it to. So that might be a good time to practice French seams or bias tape or something like that. What do you think, Helen?
I think it's definitely a personal preference. I like to include steps in my patterns for when I think that the edges should be finished to give beginner sewers a good idea, because in certain situations, it is more beneficial to finish them separately so you can press them open versus together and press them to the side. And eventually you do get a feel for that, but it's nice to have those tips ahead of time. So I think for any pattern designers out there, that's a nice thing to include. But I agree, it comes down to personal preference most of the time.
Awesome. So one of our listeners, Pam, sent us an email that just warmed my heart, and I really wanted to read it to you guys. Hello, I just found out about your podcast, and I started from the beginning, and I'm on episode 8. I absolutely love it. I live in Florida, East Coast, and I know of no one that sews clothes. So thank you for doing this podcast. I feel like I'm listening to my friends on my way to and from work. I'm just starting out sewing, but I have always wanted to sew my own clothes. I never knew there were pattern designers outside of Vogue, Butterick, Simplicity, and McCall's. This is so amazing. How can I find out about everyone who does pattern drafting? I'm following you both on Instagram, but now I'm going through all the show notes and following everyone. I'm starting out with Mimi G Style Sew It Academy. And this also was a true treat to find because I'm a visual learner and I have sat on the idea of sewing for years. Because I didn't even know how to get started, and nothing is offered local, and we only have one fabric store, so I am wanting to learn the tricks of ordering online when I get good enough. Thank you again for doing this. I'm trying to get caught up on the episodes. Pam.
Pam. Hi, Pam. We're so happy to have you on board, Pam.
Yeah, I'm really excited for you to get to this episode and hear us read your email. But also, I just want to say that when I read this email, it made me so, so, so happy because I feel like this is such a huge reason why we make this podcast, connecting the community, like closing that loop where there are people out there that don't know about indie patterns, that don't know where to start, that don't have that point of entry. And if they find our podcast, it's like opening up this whole beautiful world. And I feel like a huge reason why we started this podcast is because we want to share this world, you know, with everybody out there that sews or that's thinking about sewing. So it really just made me feel like we are doing what we're meant to be doing.
I agree. And I remember this feeling of being new to indie sewing and stumbling upon one designer and then another one and then another one and just realizing how deep the rabbit hole goes. So I know it can be a little challenging at the start, but we have a great resource for you, Pam. Fiona from Diary of a Chain Stitcher, that's her blog name, Diary of a Chain Stitcher. She has a list on her website of all of the indie pattern designers that she's rounded up. So we will link that in the show notes so you can go and find that. And I also want to put in a little quick plug for my Wednesday weekly series, because every Wednesday I link to all the new patterns that I can find that were released in that week. So there's lots of new pattern designers to be discovered there, and you can go back and check out all of the back Wednesday weeklies as well. All right, we have another email here that I wanted to read from Ashley. I manage a makerspace in a public library, and I couldn't resist putting in a plug for spaces like mine. If folks are looking for free sewing machines, free classes, or just spaces to hang out and make stuff with no pressure to buy anything, then they might not need to look any further than their local library. I'm in the US in Denver, Colorado, and I manage the Idea Lab at the Denver Public Library's Central Library. We've got everything from sewing machines and a serger to 3D printers and vinyl plotters, and have hours every day of the week where folks can come in and make whatever they want at the low, low price of $0. Ashley, thank you for letting us know about this. I wanted to put it in the show just because I don't know if in your city maybe there's something like this, but it's definitely worth looking into and maybe getting more involved in. She said in her email also that librarians are the worst promoters of things. So we're going to help you out there, Ashley, and hopefully people will go into their local libraries and see if there's anything like this that they can participate in.
Sounds awesome.
Okay, you ready to get into sustainability?
I'm so ready.
We've hyped it up a bit on the show in the last few episodes. You guys, if you're regular listeners, you'll know that this episode has been coming and we've been researching and getting ready and prepared to tackle this subject. And it's a big one.
Yeah, it's a bit intimidating, but we are very much looking forward to opening up the conversation and, Yeah, I think we should just jump in.
Sure. Okay, so where do you feel like you're at with your sustainability journey and in your sewing and in your business?
I definitely have room to grow. Over the past few months, since we've been researching this and since we've been doing the podcast, I have discovered a lot of information and it's a bit overwhelming, but I do feel motivated and I look forward to exploring sustainability and being just overall better in my sewing practice and with my business. It's just making me a lot more mindful of my choices. So that has been a journey and it's going to continue to be a journey for a while. And I look forward to that. I am definitely trying to put some practices into place to be more sustainable in my business. So one of those things is I'm going to try to source more dead stock fabrics. When you're sourcing fabrics from jobbers or designers or just warehouses locally that pick up fabrics from who knows where, these goods are, you know, being diverted from the landfill. So if I can pick some of that stock up, if it's nice quality, and sell it in my shop, that is definitely something that I'm going to try to do more often. I'm also exploring with my suppliers a little bit and trying to find some sources for more eco-friendly and organic options in terms of virgin fabrics. So that's exciting too.
I think there's a market for that for sure. Like lots of people are looking for that kind of fabric and, you know, you can do your own dyeing and stuff. There's lots of exciting ways that you can make fabric your own. So
definitely.
I look forward to that.
I also just am trying to think more about our studio itself. As my company grows, I'm thinking about, you know, the waste that we produce in our studio, just in terms of, you know, paper and garbage and that kind of thing, but also with fabric scraps. It's really interesting because I try my best to use as much fabric as possible from the Bolt. So we have remnant sales once a month on the first Friday of every month. We sell off all of our sort of odd pieces of fabric that we end up with from cutting around flaws or from the end of bolts. But we do still end up with these sort of strips of fabric that are either, you know, the flaw that we have cut around or a hole or just the end of the bolt that's dirty, something like that. So we have these bins of fabric scraps, and for the longest time, I was bringing them to H&M to be recycled. But I actually recently discovered a company called FabCycle that is local to Vancouver, and they are a fabric recycling initiative, and they have sort of a hierarchy that they follow in terms of what they do with fabric scraps. So the number one thing that they try to do is reuse. So they connect with schools and designers and other local businesses that can actually reuse these fabrics for various projects or products. And the second thing that they'll do if they can't be reused is they'll recycle them. And usually you can't take fabric and create more fabric from it, but often fabrics can be broken down and used for insulation or lining of cars, you know, the sort of like kind of fiber lining that you'll find in different vehicles. And then the last thing that they'll do is incinerator. And I was speaking with the owner of this company, and she actually said that they have not had to do that yet since they started their company. So that's encouraging to me, the fact that they're finding other avenues. So I'm really excited to be working with them to recycle our scraps. And we'll definitely put a link to their website in the show notes if anyone's local and they want to work with them. But yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I feel like I have a lot of room to grow, but I'm very open to it and looking forward to exploring it.
It sounds like you're already making moves to be a little bit more eco-friendly. And I really appreciate that because it's really hard when you're running a business, especially, you know, both of our businesses are still quite young and we're really hustling it out. And sometimes it's hard to make those decisions. You know, this FabCycle thing is awesome, but it is costing you money. So that's a decision that you had to make. And I'm really proud of you for making it.
How about you? Where are you at?
Well, it's interesting for me because so much of my business is digital. So I don't have the same kind of experience of you with having to ship things out, physical products and that kind of stuff. But I do think of myself with the pattern design as being a starting point of that process. You know, people buy the patterns and then they buy the fabric and then they create the thing. And I'm definitely a part of that cycle. And the thing that I think I can really focus on and improve is just helping people to actually follow through with the making of the pattern once they've purchased it and encourage people not to stash fabric. And that's really hard for me too, because I love fabric so much and I have a problem with fabric. I buy too much fabric. I am ashamed to admit it. I was going to say I'm not ashamed to admit it. I am ashamed to admit it. I have way too much fabric, more fabric than one person could ever need. So I'm going to work on that. I'm really going to make an effort to use the fabric that I have first. And also to upcycle things. It's something that I really enjoyed doing in the past. Some of my favorite projects and creative experiences have been around upcycling clothes. And I think that speaks to the positive feelings that you get when you do something like that. And also just the fact that I enjoy it. Why wouldn't I do more of it? Right. So
you should definitely share some of your upcycled projects in the show notes because you've made some amazing things. Your dress for the refashioners.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
Your jean jacket. You've made some great things.
Yeah, and some of the fabrics I used for that jean jacket were from Our Social Fabric, which is another Vancouver-based initiative that is recycling textiles. And they're also picking up dead stock and they're taking donations from people who have larger fabric scraps and then reselling them to people like me in the community who like to make clothing or home goods or whatever it is that you're making. It's a great resource for people in Vancouver. If you haven't been to an Our Social Fabric sale, check it out. And for anyone in other cities, check out their website. Maybe it's something that you would want to start in your city. Maybe there's something similar in your city. You never know. I stumbled upon that a couple of years ago. I had no idea it was there. Three blocks from my house. So for me, I think when I think about sustainability, I immediately think about waste and improving the amount of waste that you're throwing away, the stuff that you're using, you know, reduce, reuse, recycle, and all that stuff. But I think that sustainability can also apply to community and, you know, all of the things that we're doing with this podcast, the things that I try to do on my blogger about building community and sustaining the community that we have and making sure that it's continuing to grow and be a positive place where we can all interact. So I want to focus my efforts on that and on continuing to encourage people to join in, and hopefully I can curb my fabric habits in the process.
I think that's a great plan. So what are we hoping to get out of this sustainability exploration today? Let's talk a bit about that.
I'm hoping to get out of it an introduction to the topic, to share what we've learned so far, and also to solicit feedback from you guys. I'm sure there's lots of you out there who are doing things in your sewing practice, and we want to learn about those things, and we want to help spread the word about them so that other people can take up those practices too.
Yeah. So I encourage you guys to email us, call us. You can also record audio and send it to us via email or leave us a voicemail with your feedback on what we're going to be talking about today, any comments or ideas or resources that you want to share. We're hoping to do a community episode in the future, and that community episode is really going to be built on your feedback and all of the messages that we hopefully are going to get from you guys. So please send that our way. I do want to mention that our voicemail line has a 3-minute time limit. So if you think you're going to talk for a little while, you can record a voice memo and send it to us via email. And just to recap, our phone number is 1-844-739-9428 if you want to leave us a voicemail. And you can email us at hello@lovetosewpodcast.com. We can't wait to hear from you on this topic.
Yeah.
Let's talk a bit about how we want to approach this conversation today.
Yes, I think this is important. We wanted to set the stage and just make sure that everyone's comfortable because it is a daunting topic for us, and I'm sure for you too. So first of all, this is a judgment-free zone. We're not here to place blame. We're going to try not to make definitive statements about what you should or should not be doing because everybody's in different situations, and it's really important to remember that.
Yeah. And we want you guys to know that these uncomfortable feelings that you might have around this topic are normal. And they mean that this is probably a topic that's worth looking at. And to be completely honest, Helen and I have felt extremely uncomfortable about researching and exploring this topic over the past few weeks because it's intimidating and there's a lot of information out there. And it might make you feel a little bit icky to think about the impact that we are making on this earth. But it is important to talk about it and just open it up. So we're hoping that we can quash some of that discomfort and make it feel like an approachable topic for you guys.
Yeah. I mean, as Aiden Owen said so beautifully in his episode last week, we have a tendency to ignore all the hurt in the world, but none of the healing can happen until we face into the hurt. So we're hoping to face into it a bit today all together.
Okay, so the first thing that we want to talk about is the fact that sewing in and of itself is a major sustainability win.
Yeah, we don't want to gloss over this. I think we can get down on ourselves sometimes with our sewing practice or think that maybe we're not doing enough. But the fact that you even chose to start making your own clothes, whether you're making all your own clothes or you've made one shirt or one napkin, you know, the fact that you made that choice to learn the skill and maybe apply it to your wardrobe and make a change by maybe not buying as much fast fashion, making your own clothes, that's amazing. Like, that's not anything to sneeze at.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that you making this choice is going to have an effect on the people all around you. And it's really something that you should be proud of. If you're listening and if you're sewing, that's definitely a step in the right direction.
I really feel like my sewing my own clothes has had an effect on my friends and family and just opening people's eyes to the possibilities, right? I mean, not everybody thinks of sewing as something that they can do to make a really wearable wardrobe.
We've proved that it is.
Case and point.
So how do we feel now when we go into ready-to-wear shops?
Oh my gosh. I'm sure that many of you can relate to this, but whenever I go into ready-to-wear shops, specifically like fast fashion kind of shops, it's overwhelming now. And it's crazy to think that even just a few years ago, I would go into those shops with glee, just gleeful about how cheap everything was and how many choices there were and how you could get the same top in five different colors. And, you know, that used to make me really happy, mm-hmm. really happy. Mm-hmm. And I had a pretty bad shopping habit for quite a while. I think lots of women can relate to that too. And now that I'm making my own clothes, when I go into shops, it's a totally different experience. You know, all of that, those happy feelings have turned into really contemplative feelings. When I look at those things, I look at how cheap things are, and you have to wonder, like, how did they make it for that cheap? You know, as a sewer, how long it takes to make something, how much the materials cost, the effort that goes into it. And so when you see those cheap prices and you see all of those options, you are going to ask questions. And I think that's a good thing. So it's really changed my perspective on fashion.
Yeah. And the quality too is a huge factor. When I'm in these fast fashion shops, because I know how to sew, I'm looking at details just inherently. I mean, it's automatic. You're looking at the inside of garments because you want to see how things are made. And you kind of notice that maybe they cut corners on the quality and things aren't so nice, or the fabric doesn't feel very nice. And so it just kind of gives you an icky feeling to think like, well, am I really going to get much use out of this? And also, who wasn't paid fairly? You know, if this is only a $5 top, you know, something along the way was cut back on. So I think that it definitely is a different experience when you get really into sewing and then you go into a ready-to-wear store.
Yeah. And I'm extremely grateful for that experience. And that's another reason to spread the word about sewing and get people making their own clothes so that other people can have that experience, because it's eye-opening.
So I think everybody is at a different place in their sewing journey.
Yeah, and there are so many different ways to be sustainable in your life. Sewing is just one part of your life. And in looking into different aspects of waste and sustainability around sewing, it got me thinking about the rest of my life and how I live it and the things that I consume and the things that I throw away. And for everybody, there's going to be a different situation depending on your finances, your resources, your own feelings, your desires. You have to decide where you want to improve and to what extent, because not only are you making sustainable decisions, but those decisions have to be sustainable. You want something that you're going to be able to keep doing, right?
Yeah. And there are so many different ways that we can all be more sustainable in our everyday lives. So if your sewing practice is a way that you want to implement more sustainable practices, then great. But if you want to offset maybe buying some fabrics that are less eco-friendly with another way of being sustainable in your life, you can do that too. There's just, you have to make the decision that is right for your life.
Yeah, because for many people, we've talked about this in the show, sewing is like their lifeline, you know, it's their creative space where they get time to themselves, where they get to exercise those creative muscles, where they get to grow creatively. And I think that's a sacred space that we want to protect. And we want to give tools and suggestions for how to be more sustainable. But at the same time, if sewing is your therapy and it's your safe space and you just want to go there and shut everything else out and have fun, I think that's okay too. Everybody needs to find the right balance.
So in terms of sustainable sewing, we want to look at a few different factors because you're not just looking at one thing. There are a lot of different factors that come into play when you're trying to think more sustainably. Mainly, you're looking at the environmental impact that you're making on the world and also the social justice aspect of it. So the people that are making your clothing or your fabric or the goods that you're consuming versus the impact that the production is making on the world.
And the waste.
Yes.
So Megan Nielsen is doing a series on her blog right now about sustainability in sewing. And she had this really great article that we pulled a lot of this information from. So we're going to link that in the show notes. So thank you, Megan, for providing some more information on some of these subjects. So in terms of raw material, when we're looking at sewing, what is good for the planet?
So definitely natural fibers are what you want to look at first because they're natural and they're going to break down over time and spend less time in the landfill. Things like polyester and other man-made fibers, they break down into microfibers that are actually really harmful to marine life and they have lasting effects on our environment. They also take a much longer time to break down. So they're going to sit in the landfill for hundreds of years. If you want to pick more natural fibers, you're going to want to look for things like organic cotton, linen, silk, wool, alpaca, and hemp.
Yeah, and we're not saying that these natural fibers are perfect. All of these fibers have to be produced in some way. There's production around them, then they have to get shipped, and then they, you know, there's a whole process that happens around these ones too. It's just, again, coming back to that choice that you're making.
So if you're wanting to offset the landfill, then picking natural fibers is a good way to go.
They're also just like nicer to wear.
That's true. All right. So the next thing that you might want to think about in terms of the materials that you're using is quality. Because if you are picking a higher quality fabric, it's going to last longer and it's going to have less of an impact in terms of its life cycle because it's going to have a longer life cycle, right? So picking a higher quality fabric means that you're going to have a garment in the end that washes better, that wears better, that lasts longer. And that is a win across the board because at the end of the day, we want our clothes to last us as long as possible so that we're not just consuming and throwing away, consuming and throwing away.
Yes, we're all trying to break out of that cycle, right? So I definitely agree about buying quality fabrics. This is a shift that I've been making over time with my sewing practice. I think it's a hard one to do right off the bat when you're starting because those higher quality fabrics also have a higher price tag, right? So a little bit of sticker shock can sometimes happen with those higher quality fabrics. But I will say that this comes down to deciding about your priorities and what you want to spend your money on because you can buy less fabric and you probably don't need, like me, all of the fabric that you're consuming, right? So consuming a little bit less fabric and saving up your money so you can afford those more quality goods.
Yeah, definitely. Also, if you are worried about buying these higher priced fabrics and maybe you're a beginner or you like to make muslins, you can use sheets or other kinds of fabrics that you're recycling. So you can go to thrift shops and find fabrics there or use something in your stash that might be a little bit of a lower quality to do your test garments or, you know, your initial exploration of sewing.
Yes, I'm all about using the old sheets for my tests. It's great.
Yeah. So what about finishing of the fabric? I mean, a fiber might be natural, but what about the dyes and the treatment of the fabric and the production of the fabric?
This is where it really gets complicated and it's hard to find information about this topic. So as we said at the beginning, we really welcome any feedback and resources that you guys have to share with us. So dyeing does have a huge impact on the environment. It really sucks because as sewists and as fashion lovers, we love color and we love print, but all of those things have to be dyed on and printed on. So that does have a negative impact on the environment. And not every textile factory has a closed loop system where they're recycling water and dyes and things like that. Some of them are just going straight into the rivers.
It's true. And if you want to make a more conscious, sustainable decision in terms of
fabric dyes and finishing, you can purchase natural undyed fabrics and do the dyeing yourself, or you can look for certified organic fabrics. And the different companies that do that are Oikotex and GOTS, which stands for Global Organic Textile Standard. So if you look for those little labels on the fabrics that you're buying, those organizations test and certify the textiles to be at a certain standard in terms of environmental impact, and they will certify different levels of production. So it's not necessarily certified from beginning to end. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. So just ask questions and do your research if this is something that is really important to you. There's definitely ways to find fabrics that are going to meet those needs. And I do want to reiterate what you said about lack of information on this topic, especially myself being in the fabric business. I mean, I've more recently been trying to ask more questions of my suppliers. A lot of the time they'll just say, you know what, we don't have that information. And that's frustrating. And when I try to do more research online, it's really difficult to find information. I mean, there's so much out there about garment production, the consequences of that on, you know, people and the environment. But fabric production, there's not a lot of information on the social aspect of it, the conditions of workers and that sort of thing. And there's also not a ton of information about the impact of the actual fabric production aspect. And I imagine that it's not great. But if anybody out there has some resources that they would like to share with us, I would really appreciate that, because it's definitely something that I'm interested in learning a lot more about.
Yeah, and I think that one of the reasons that there's a lot of information out there about the fast fashion side of things is because of the Rana Plaza collapse that happened in 2013. And we mentioned this a little bit in Erin Dollar's episode, but what happened here was that in Bangladesh, there was a building where garment workers were creating clothes, and there were warning signs that the building was going to collapse. There were cracks in the walls, and those warning signs were ignored, and the building came down, and over 1,000 people were killed, and over 2,000 people were injured in this building collapse. And it was a real tragedy, and I think it brought this to the forefront because it was on all the news channels. It was hard to ignore. You know, like we said, a lot of the times we do tend to turn a blind eye to the real reality of situations. And this collapse really brought this to the forefront and made people look at fast fashion in a new way.
Yeah, it was impossible to ignore. So I think that it did spur a lot of different organizations and a movement against fast fashion, but we still have a long way to go. If you guys are interested in learning more about this, there's a great documentary out there called The True Cost that is really eye-opening, and it does explore the Rana Plaza tragedy. So if you guys want to learn more about that and about the fast fashion industry, that's a good place to start.
Yeah. And it really makes you think about how we can change the situation, right? You feel helpless if you live in a different country than these things are happening. You feel like there's nothing that you can do to really impact this other than maybe stop shopping at these stores. But it's not as simple as that, because these stores are providing jobs for these people who live in these countries, and those people actually really need those jobs. So the best thing that we can do is to ask questions of the companies that we're buying of, or even of the companies that we're critical of, and make sure that they're holding themselves to a higher ethical standard and treating their employees right, paying them a fair wage, and making sure that they're safe.
So another thing that you can definitely do is seek out locally produced goods. So this is definitely difficult with fabrics. There are not that many places in North America making fabric. But if you can find them, support them. We want to let these organizations and companies know that we want more fabric to be produced here. So I encourage you to do that. And just in terms of other kinds of goods that aren't fabric related, if you're looking for something that's locally sourced, that's a step in the right direction.
And like I mentioned earlier, always asking questions when you're in a position to buy something. You do have a lot of power in that position, and you want to make sure that you're using that power to make change in the world. So if you want to know something about something that you're purchasing, ask and see what information you get back. A lot of times, companies don't even look into these things because nobody's asking. And along that vein, try and find companies that are more transparent about their practices and labor policies and support those companies.
All right. So we
are talking about sustainability today, and we want to give you guys some tools and some tangible things that you can do, that you can apply to your everyday lives that can make you feel better about your impact on the world. And a good approach is the one that we talked about with Erin Dollar in episode 33, and that is, whenever you make a choice, try to choose the more sustainable option.
I love this strategy because it's so dead simple. All right, so first of all, fabric scraps. I mean, I think this comes to mind for everyone with the sewing practice. When it comes to waste, we think about the fabric scraps. So for the little tiny scraps and the threads and the tiny little snippets from your serger and all that stuff, you can recycle these fabrics at H&M. We've talked about this before. They have a close the loop program where they're collecting textiles and then recycling them. This is not a perfect system by any means. And to be honest, we're not 100% sure where these textiles are going and exactly what's happening with them, but it's something.
Yeah, definitely. It's much better than throwing it in the garbage. Let's say that, right? Yeah. I encourage you to research the options in your city if you don't have an H&M nearby, or if you don't feel 100% on board with that idea. You can Google it and you can look it up and try to figure out if your city recycles textiles or if there's an organization that might be doing that in your city. And if there isn't, maybe you could start one.
Yeah.
So you can use your scraps for projects, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's lots of opportunities for projects with scraps. And I'm going to try and do some things on my blog around fabric scraps in the coming months, because I do think it is hard to come up with good ideas, but I think there's lots out there. So first off, quilting comes to mind, because you use lots of small pieces in quilting. So if you hang on to your fabric scraps, getting into quilting or making a small, even just a placemat or something, you know, decorative to put on your table, at least you're turning that into something, right? The one thing to consider when you're using your fabric scraps for quilting is just to make sure that you're choosing long wearing fabrics, because you don't want your quilt to come apart. So anything that's really loosely woven is not going to work particularly well for a quilt. But if you keep your cotton shirtings, your denim even would be great. It would be kind of cool. For a quilt, I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, definitely. Another thing you can make with small scraps is bags. You can make a little zipper pouch or a makeup bag, dop kit, pencil case,
mm-hmm. a little shopping tote, take to the farmer's market.
Yes.
Even like a larger bag, like a backpack, if you piece some different fabrics together, use different fabrics for the linings, for the pockets, you know, really get creative.
I sometimes look at my scrap bin, and especially in my home sewing practice, and I look and I'm like, all these fabrics look so lovely together, because I have a pretty clear palette that I gravitate towards. So don't be shy to mix those fabrics and do a little bit of piecing, because often you'll have your own color style and they'll go nicely together and maybe not look as hippie granola as you think it will.
I mean, I'm kind of into the hippie granola look. And yeah. I've always thought about taking all of my rayon challis scraps and making like a patchwork dress out of them, just all these different florals together.
It would be amazing.
It would be cute, right?
You should totally do it.
Okay. I'm on it. For smaller scraps, I thought a fun project would be a hair scrunchie.
You're so into scrunchies right now. It's amazing.
Look, I've got long hair, and they're a much better option when you have long hair, especially if you're sleeping, to protect your hair.
Less breakage,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, a lot less breakage. So a scrunchie would be cute. You just get some, you can keep your elastic scraps from your project and your fabric scraps, and together, hair scrunchie.
I love that.
Cute, right?
Ooh, next one is exciting. Doll making.
I love this idea. Heather from Heather and the Pugs makes dolls, and I'm always admiring her work. I think it's such a fun idea. You can make little outfits for your little dolls. I mean, it's perfect.
Yeah, if you have any nieces, nephews, kids, friends,
pets,
make some dolls.
Next on the list, we have weaving. You and I took a little weaving workshop, and we were mostly working with yarn, which is a great way also for knitters to use some of their yarn scraps. But you can also weave in fabric scraps to your knitting and do some really interesting fiber arts things. And it kind of got me thinking about other fiber arts practices. And I think fiber art is having a big moment right now. Everyone wants, you know, weavings and macrame wall hangings and all sorts of stuff in their home. And we have this opportunity, because we have all these fabric scraps, to create so many interesting things. And you don't have to stop at macrame, you know, what else could you do?
In the same vein, rag rugs.
Mm-hmm. Rag rugs are really fun, basically taking fabric scraps and tying them together. There's different ways that you can make rag rugs. There's lots of tutorials online, particularly good for all of those knit scraps, I think.
Yeah, another great way to use up scraps is for lingerie. So things like bras and undies take up very little fabric. Helen, you have an awesome strategy.
I do. I've been doing this for a little while. Whenever I cut out a knit project, like a t-shirt or a pair of Avery leggings, I will at the same time cut out underwear and bras, because I don't want to have to keep those scraps in a separate area and then get the scraps out again in order to cut out the underwear. So if I just get out my underwear pattern at the same time as my t-shirt pattern and I cut them both out at once, and then I just put all of the cutout underwear in a bag, and when that bag gets full, I have an underwear making party and I make 10 new pairs of undies, and it's perfect. That way I end up with a lot less scraps.
This is such a great idea.
Mm-hmm. And especially with the Avery leggings, you know, if you're using a more performance knit, that's actually a great fabric for something like a Watson bra, because it does have that extra support. And then all you need to get is just the elastics and the findings.
Another great project for small scraps is bow ties.
Bow ties are so much fun. I think you can have a lot of fun with prints with bow ties, and they don't require a lot of fabric.
Great point. What else do we have on our list?
Baby clothes. I thought of this because I have a very young niece and she's so small, and I could totally make her clothes out of my knit scraps. You do want to make sure that you're using fibers that are going to jive well with baby skin, nothing that's going to irritate them. But if you keep that into consideration, baby onesies, baby tops, baby pants.
Baby adorable stuff. Little baby hats.
Baby hats.
Okay. Also headbands.
Headbands is a great one for knit fabrics. I mean, you might not need more than like 8 headbands.
That's true. I mean, when you're washing your face, though, you use a headband.
I know. The washing the face headband is really great.
Yeah. Okay. Pillow covers.
Pillow covers is fun. And even if the fabric isn't big enough to make an entire pillow cover, piecing fabrics together to make a pillow cover.
Love it.
Little intro to quilting right there.
Okay, another great idea is artwork. If you really love a fabric that you have in your stash and you have a little piece left after you've finished your project, you can actually frame that and use it as art.
Yeah, or wrap it around a canvas and staple it on the back so you have more of a 3D kind of textured piece. I think there's lots of possibility here for showcasing different textiles in your home.
Yes. And finally, one great thing to do is keeping your scraps and using them for stuffing. You can use them to stuff a big pillow or kind of like a poof, bean bags. This is a really fun thing to do. My office assistant, Laura, had some gifts that she gave for the holidays, and she filled them with fabric scraps from our office. And it actually, you can put a lot of fabric scraps in a project like this. So it's a great way to use them up and actually make use of them in your everyday life.
I love it. Imagine just having a giant bean bag like in your basement rec room that you put all your fabric scraps in.
It's perfect. Hide the evidence, right?
So along this vein, ending up with fabric scraps is an issue. One thing that you can do to make sure that you're ending up with a piece that's usable is to cut creatively. Explore cutting your fabric in different ways so that you end up with less waste. Maybe you can use a little bit less fabric, or you end up with a piece that's actually usable for another project. Pattern designers like myself tend to lay things out in the most economical way, but also the easiest way to understand, right? So if we're in a situation where you can cut out your fabric for an extra small this way, and then a small this way, and a medium this way, and then you have basically a different cutting layout for every view, it starts to get really, really confusing for the user. So speaking from experience, we try to balance cutting it out economically with the clearest way to explain cutting it out, right?
Yeah. And you're also making these cutting layouts for two different widths of fabric, but there are so many other widths in between. So depending on the fabric that you're using, there could definitely be a better way to lay out your pieces based on the width of your fabric. So explore that, because that is a great way to save a little bit of space. And then you'll end up with a bigger piece at the end that you could maybe use for another garment or just repurpose in a way that you might not have expected.
Mm-hmm. And one thing that you can do is to print out all of your pattern pieces before you buy your fabric and explore how you're going to lay them out, measure the final layout, and then make sure that you're buying the fabric that meets that measurement exactly. And that way you will save on fabric. The fabric requirements is another area of pattern design that is a little bit tricky, because we don't want to underestimate the amount of fabric that it's going to require. We always want to add just a little bit to account for things like shrinkage, directional prints, And just making sure that there's enough like room to breathe for people when they're cutting things out, a little bit of wiggle room in case they make a mistake, you know? So if you're a really precise sewist and you want to figure this out ahead of time, you can definitely save on fabric by figuring out your cutting layout before you buy your fabric. And cutting flat is going to give you a lot more room to arrange the pieces in the best possible way. Always remember to stay on grain.
Yes. And if you're cutting flat for our beginners out there, that basically means that you're cutting on a single layer of fabric, not the double layer on fold. So you will have to trace your pattern pieces so that they are a full piece versus just a half piece, or you can trace around one half and then flip it over and trace around the other half, depending how you like to cut your fabric. But it is a really great way to save on fabric. So that's an excellent tip, Helen.
All right. The other thing that you can consider with your sewing and with your clothes in general is just how are you going to care for your fabric and for your garments? Washing and ironing fabric actually has a huge impact. You might not think of it when you're thinking about impact and sustainability, but just consider how many times you wash every piece of clothing that you have and all of the water that you use.
Yeah. I mean, when you are washing, not only are you wasting water, but you're also shortening the life of your garment, because the more you wash a fabric, most of the time the fibers break down a little bit at a time and your garment is going to not last you as long. So try to wait as long as you can in between washes. I mean, obviously there is a time to wash a garment, but a lot of the time it's just a knee-jerk reaction to throw something in the laundry when really, if you've only worn it for a few hours or for a day, it could be fine and you don't necessarily have to wash it between every wear.
Yeah, particularly with polyester fabrics, every time you wash them, the fibers break down. And we mentioned earlier that these microfibers have an impact on the marine environment. You're washing your polyester fabrics, those microfibers are going into the water system, and it does have a lasting impact. So try to think about this aspect of caring for your clothes and not always washing them automatically. Maybe you spot clean a little bit, you know, just wash the armpits. I do that sometimes.
Yeah.
Works great.
Just wash the armpits, guys.
Helen says, just wash the armpits.
Okay. One great tip that you wrote down, Helen, is use recycled paper for printing out your patterns.
Yeah. I'm sure you guys have done this before. You print out a pattern, you forget to check the actual size, and it all comes out not the right scale. Just flip those papers over and stick them back in your printer.
Yeah.
Use the other side. Just don't get confused when you start taping it together.
Oh, yeah. Maybe mark the wrong side of those pieces of paper.
But we all have those loose scraps of paper sitting around. You can use those when you're printing your patterns.
Oh, yeah. You know when you print something and then there's like one line on the last page, like if you're printing a document or something?
Yeah. I leave those in a little pile for use later.
Yeah. Another thing that you can recycle is your thread spools. So those are made out of plastic, and things like Notions packaging as well. Don't just automatically throw that stuff in the garbage. I know it's easy to just toss it, but those are little things that can make a big difference over time. Also, on the topic of recycling and perhaps reusing, you can definitely reuse elements of an older garment that you might be ready to recycle. Something like a zipper or a button from an old garment. Bras are a great place to recycle certain different notions, like the rings and sliders, or sometimes the little back clasp or the underwires.
Yeah, there's so many different elements in garments that we can reuse, and it's fun to deconstruct them because it's a learning process as well. You get to actually take an in-depth look at how things are made.
Yeah, another great thing that you can think about is just replacing an element of a garment. And what comes to mind right now is Christine Haynes recently shared a bunch of handmade bras that she had made where the straps had stretched out over time. So all she did was cut off the straps and replace them. And then it was like she had a new bra. So that's something that you might not think of if there's a certain element of a garment that is really worn down. Just replacing that one element and giving your garment new life.
Yeah, I really think as sewists, we have this amazing opportunity to breathe new life into garments. And for a lot of people, that's kind of out of reach. You know, unfortunately, sewing is not being taught as much in schools anymore. It's not a skill that people are automatically getting to know and getting to learn how to mend their own clothes. So teaching other people how to mend is a great way to have an impact. And mending your own clothes, just because something has a rip in it or is missing some buttons, doesn't mean that it needs to be, you know, thrown in the donation bin. We have this power to mend our clothes, and we should do that.
So what you can also do is shop for fabrics that are getting a second life. So look for shops that are stocking designer offcuts. You can organize a fabric swap with your sewing friends. Some smaller fabric shops purchase from local designers or jobbers, so look out for that when you are sourcing fabrics for your projects.
Yes, you can also look out for eco-friendly or organic fabric. We talked a bit about what to look for when it comes to finding those fabrics. So if you wanted to have a more eco-friendly angle, you know, just dig a little deeper when you're shopping.
Yeah, definitely. So like we mentioned, you can also buy secondhand and refashion, repurposing and reusing garments that you might have, or shopping at thrift stores and refashioning garments that are from thrift shops is a great and really fun thing to do.
Yeah, we interviewed Portia from the Refashioners on our show. She runs an annual event where we refashion garments. So we'll link to that in the show notes. There's tons of inspiration on there. And there's a bit of an ugly truth here, you guys. There's way more clothing being produced in the world than the world actually needs. And we are getting rid of our clothes at an alarming rate. And unfortunately, most of the clothes that we put in those donation bins, they're ending up in a landfill somewhere overseas.
Yeah, it's really terrible. But I think that every little way that you can offset that is going to be a step in the right direction. So refashioning is a really good strategy. Okay, another great thing that you can do is swapping fabric, swapping clothes with your friends. It's really fun and it's also a really sustainable thing to do.
I've been to a few clothing swaps and they are really fun, but I've never been to a fabric one. That sounds amazing. So lastly, we want to talk a little bit about slowing down with your sewing. We've mentioned this a few times on the podcast. I'm probably the worst advocate for this in the world because, as you guys know, I sew up a storm over on Helen's Closet. But one thing that I am really working on is choosing what I make more wisely, thinking really hard about what I'm going to wear and trying to make things that are going to last me a long time, that aren't going to just be for a certain season or for a certain period in my life, that are going to take me, you know, for the next 5-10 years, and making them out of quality fabrics is something that I'm really striving to do. So I think if you can approach your sewing in that way, where you're thinking a lot about what you actually want to get out of that final garment that you're producing and slowing down so that you can make it the best quality that it can be, would be a great way to have an impact.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, I mean, at the end of the day, what's the rush? I don't think that there's any need to rush through sewing. Sometimes we can get a little bit excited and ahead of ourselves, but taking things one project at a time and being more thoughtful about that is a really great strategy.
And on that note, if you want your clothing to last, it's important to take really good care of it. You know, just throwing it in the wash and then not putting it in the dryer is one way that you can extend the life of your garments, or hand washing it and then hanging it to dry. Using an eco-friendly detergent is not only good for the environment, it's better for your clothing and it will reduce the wear on your clothes over time, so they will last longer so that we can get the most use out of them and they don't end up in those donation bins. And the last thing I wrote down here was wear your clothes with pride. And it sounds a little bit silly, but all I really meant by this is just that it's okay to wear the same shirt 5 days a week, you know? If you take really good care of your clothes, especially if you make your own clothes, you gotta wear those clothes with pride. You gotta step out into the world wearing the clothes that you own and really treasuring them, because they are things in your life that are supposed to represent you and who you are. So I think it's important just to not shy away from loving those garments that you do have, and appreciating what you have.
Yeah. So let's talk about what is the number one thing you can do as a listener moving forward. We want to give you guys a overall takeaway from this episode.
Yes. I think that the number one thing that we can all do is just to ask questions. Our voice is the most powerful tool that we all have. And the way that we can use it with sustainability is to ask questions of the companies that we're purchasing from, the companies that are working in this industry, in the fashion industry, and make sure that they know that we're interested in learning more and that we're interested in things like social justice and environmental impact. There's actually a week that happens on an annual basis. It's organized by the Fashion Revolution. It's called Fashion Revolution Week, and it's coming up in April. It's going to be April 23rd to the 29th. And the whole idea behind this Fashion Revolution Week is to ask questions about working conditions, work practices, and the overall impact of the fashion industry on people and on the planet. So what you can do to join in Fashion Revolution Week is to tag companies that you purchase fashion from and ask who made my clothes. Make sure that they know that you're interested in that information. And as makers, Emily from In the Folds organizes a bit of a maker side to the Fashion Revolution Week, and she uses the hashtag #MakersForFashRev and #IMadeMyClothes. So you can share clothes that you've made and just spread the word that making your clothes is an option.
Yeah. And we'll put links to all of this in the show notes for sure for you guys. And I just want to say, moving forward, let's just all try to question and challenge things a little bit more. I think if we all try to live our lives in a way that is a little bit less harmful to the planet and the people living in it, then we will end up in a much better place in the end.
Agreed.
That's it for today's episode of Love to Sew. You can find me, Caroline, at blackbirdfabrics.com and Helen at helenscloset.ca.
We're recording today in sunny Vancouver, Canada, and you can get links for everything we talked about in today's episode at lovetosewpodcast.com.
Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. We love reading your reviews, you guys. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Just search Love to Sew.
And remember that we want to do a community episode about sustainability. So please leave us a voicemail, send us an email, or record some audio and send it our way with all of your thoughts about sustainability. You can reach us at 1-844-SO-WHAT. That's 1-844-739-9428 or hello at lovetosewpodcast.com.
And guys, if you would like to support us on an ongoing basis, you can go to patreon.com/lovetosew to check out your options there.
Thank you all so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye. I just finished sewing a t-shirt.
I'm sorry, this is going to be such a good blooper.